Frank is founder and president of Omnia Audio, an innovative and world-leading signal processing company headquartered in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm reading from a script here. His Omnia line of audio processors are now the industry benchmark. He leads a talented team that researches, designs, and develops audio processing for every form of broadcasting, FM, AM, HD radio, DAB/DRM, music mastering, and webcasting. He's a frequent presenter at NAB, AES, SBE, and state broadcast conventions, including here. I think he's been here several times in the last several years, so I don't know if it's every year, but pretty close. And writes for all of the major broadcast industry trade publications. In an earlier life, he got down and dirty in the trenches of day-to-day radio as chief engineer for a number of successful radio stations, WMMS/WHK in Cleveland, KSAN/KNEW in San Francisco, and the most well-known being Z100 WHTZ-FM in New York City, which he designed and built in 1983. Outside of the world of broadcasting, he's deeply involved in the world of eighth-inch scale live steam railroading, and he will gladly talk trains to anyone that shows an interest. It's with great pleasure I introduce Frank Foti.
Thanks, Gordon. I am a throwback to the steam era, so if any of you have nothing to do this Saturday, make your way to the park just outside of Cleveland known as Penitentiary Glen. I'll be most happy to share a ride on my 8th scale live steam locomotive, which happens to be a 462 Pacific. It was actually modeled after a Boston and Maine locomotive. But I'd love to share that story with you afterwards, although there's a particular continental flight that has to get my weary body back to Cleveland, Ohio. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, I'm going to speak today on something that is probably one of the most fun presentations I've done ever. And I've had the chance to do some, what I think were some fun presentations. I remember a few years ago up here, we did a thing on surround sound and, talking about things that deal with intermodulation on the internet and things of that nature. But this one really goes to the core of what I'm all about, which is basically broadcast audio processing. And one of the things that we're constantly asked about, and in fact, I was just speaking with a customer in the hallway, we're talking about a situation that he's working on. And broadcasters in this day and age are always, on one hand, it's almost like a paradox, you know. I got to be clean, yet I got to be loud. And, you know, you want to talk about, you know, paradoxical situation, that's it. But, you know, growing up on rock and roll and working a lot of radio stations, and even though I'm a young 53 years old, I do adhere to this: if it's too loud, you are too old. But given that as a comment, looking at the way the world is today with regard to dynamics processing on the air, modern processing has reached extreme levels. I just came back, matter of fact, I almost came directly from New York City where I was on a couple of panels at AES, and there was a lot of talk about listener fatigue, not only just dealing with over-the-air radio, but listener fatigue based on CD, streaming, and basically just about any kind of transmission method. And on one hand, you could say, well, it's because everything's just too damn loud. And there is some truth in that, and today's presentation is going to go into the details on why that is and how, you know, some of the hows and whys we can have a competitively loud signal, yet offer back some compelling quality. The recording industry, as you know, has gotten on the bandwagon, but probably the biggest thing is that whole psychological thing that, you know, revolves in the mind of a lot of program directors and station personnel, that gotta be louder than the other guy syndrome, you know, where that every moment to moment of, you know, audio that's going out over the air has gotta be louder than the guy up or down the dial. And not necessarily that it has to be that way, but the bottom line is there is a reduction in quality, the definition of the audio, And more importantly, there's an increased audible annoyance. Borrowing from Saturday Night Live, this is kind of the way things have gotten. And the goal now is basically this challenge and a promise came about a couple years ago when we were celebrating the 10th birthday of the Omnia product line. I was doing an interview with one of the trade publications, and they said, so, you know, what is it like going forward? What do you see looking into the crystal ball for doing audio processing? And I stuck my neck out and I said, we have to find a way to put quality back on the air. Now, we all know that you want to put nice quality back on the air, just go into the audio cabinet and crank the processing down a significant amount. You know, yeah, the loudness is going to drop and the quality is going to go up. But I'm not aware of many station managers or program directors or owners that are going to buy into that. And I realize that there could be a lot of debate and psychological discussion about that, and that's probably, you know, if they had a second night of nuts and bolts discussion here, I'd be happy to come back and we could get in on that. But the reality is as long as people are going to be modulating carriers, be it AM or FM or over the internet or what have you, competitive loudness is always going to be an issue. So the goal yours truly set out to was to, what are we going to need to do to put quality back in on your audio, yet maintain competitive loudness? Yep, it's simple. Whip up a new algorithm. You know, there's a joke around our office. Oh, yeah, it's just a few lines of code. And if you looked at the number of lines of code, yeah, it's a few thousand, 10,000, or what have you, lines of code. And what I'm happy to talk about today is grew out of a 2-year research project. It was very exciting work, and I'm going to share some of the results of that. And the results were quite revealing, and this presentation highlights those efforts. The simple, you know, basically what I did a couple of years ago was I went away basically from, I didn't listen to the radio, I didn't listen to any of our products. It was over like the holiday season, and I just let my ears decompress. It's kind of like sticking the ears in a, you know, in a, what is it if you drink or do, you know, a rehab, you know, and detox the ears for a bit. And I came in one day, it was after the first of the year, I turned on our product and I said, you're going to listen to it critically and forget that the faceplate is our logo. You're just going to be down honest with yourself. And the ego got kicked around a little bit, and I set it up for aggressive processing. And as it says right here, it was a quite humbling experience. And maybe the 2 years wasn't for research. It's how long it took to let the ego recover. But out of that, I did come to the realization that if we want to offer something that will be quality on the radio, yet competitive, we have to really dig in and find out where the problems are, and we're going to be talking about that. So let's talk about the pain. Well, if you look at modern music mastering, that's something where a lot of the content can get us into trouble right from the get-go. We can do a little bit about that, not much, but as all of us know, that this whole thing with music mastering has become out of hand. Generally speaking, what I was hearing as I was doing my critical evaluation was rich sound to the signal processing, heavy bass, emphasized presence and treble. And when listening to it aggressively, it was yielding what I call the synthetic tonality and quality. The treble at times was overly bright and sometimes harsh, especially with current material. The bass, while it was tightly defined, sometimes it was distorted. So there was a nice little laundry list of things to dig into. But there was something that really stood out, and this is what I call the distinct annoyance. And by the way, in the some of the dialogues this past weekend at AES, we were talking about listener fatigue. What really came out wasn't so much that it's loudness that was fatiguing, but the qualities to the audio signal that are annoying. So is it loud that's being fatiguing, or is it the byproducts of other things that are causing annoyances that's fatiguing? And generally, most people seem to agree with the annoyance aspect. But in this case, there was something that I heard that sounded like a sizzling, I'll call it like a frying of bacon and eggs. It was annoying in the mid-range, the presence in the treble range. And by the way, once I started digging into this, I said, well, you know, is this a problem unique to us? Or is this a problem unique to just broadcast audio processing, specifically FM? So having, you know, all our competitors' products, I dug them all out. And by the way, they all had the latest and greatest software. And I noticed that the problems that I was hearing it to a various degree on all products. So I said, well, what's bothering me, you know, we'll be an equal opportunity offender by digging into this. But what do I need to do to reduce the problem? I noticed if I reduced the clipping in our product or other products, the problem went away or became minimized. So at first I said, well, I wonder if this is the age-old issue of, you know, heavy low frequencies IMing the rest of the audio spectrum into the clipper or the final emitter and causing IM. Could that be the issue? Until I stumbled across a song by Kelly Clarkson. The name of the song is called Because of You. This here's a little spectral picture. And the intro of this song is going to tell us the story. It's basically voice and piano, as you'll see on the spectrum, the spectrograph here. There's virtually next to no low end to it. And I believe the next is we're going to have an audio sample that'll be unprocessed of the intro. Okay. What I then did was we're going to run the same sample through an audio processor set up to use an aggressive preset, and here's what happens. Probably able to hear the frying of eggs. So that we can't be an equal opportunity offender, here's another product. I think by now you get the picture. On this is what I call it, the oral obstacle course. There was no bass in the segment, but the sizzle was there. So I'm thinking, well, if there's no bass IMing, you know, the vocals and the piano into clipping or what have you, what's going on here? And by the way, I ran this. If I never have to hear this song again, believe me, I'll be happy. It's a good song, but it's enough's enough. But I did hear it on all products, so I'm thinking, okay, I think we're on to something here. Now, now, smart guy, what's going on? So, investigation. I figured it's time to delve into the clipping methods, because if I reduced the clipping problem, basically went away. Could I have reached the limitations of distortion control or canceling? You know, have I reached a limitation? Have we reached a point where the competitive level of broadcasting today has pushed the present means beyond capabilities? So we'll do a little bit of simple investigation here. This here is just so you guys know where I'm coming from. Here's a simple picture of looking at a clipped 1 kilohertz sample and the odd harmonics that are created on a spectrum. Easy to deal with. We can play some games with some filters, do some hocus pocus, you know, black magic that us audio processing wackos do, and we can, you know, make your ear not think that there's any clipping going on. But what happens when we add other harmonic spectra? So I came up with what I call the clipper-induced intermodulation distortion test. And this is fairly easy to perform. I basically took a 100 hertz signal, and I pushed it to where I'm getting about 3 dB of clipping on the 100 hertz alone. And then I mixed in upper high frequency spectral. And in this case, you'll see a sweep from 5 kilohertz to 15 kilohertz. By the way, since we're dealing with FM, you kind of got to kick in one added little anomaly, and that's called preemphasis. And 75 microseconds does provide a nice little challenge. So any spectrum that we may see fall between the fundamentals is going to be clipper-induced intermod. There, my friends, as you can see, is the fundamental, and all the stuff in the middle is clipper-induced intermod. Now, you're actually watching a sweep here. The yellow is as we're sweeping up, and you can see it's third order harmonic that eventually goes away due to the low-pass filtering. And as we get higher in frequency, you'll see the intermod just continues to raise and raise and raise. And this is through a system that has distortion control. So I'm thinking, I wonder if this is all that bacon and eggs that we're hearing on Ms. Clarkson's voice. So what do we do? When we got many signals present, it sizzles. Obviously not good. I then took the time to dig into, you know, the methods of doing fine limiting, distortion canceling. There's a lot of rhetoric out there right now. Oh, you know, if you've got 20, 30 bands of this, that, or the other thing, you'll have no problems. Well, by the way, those systems actually seem to work, cause even more trouble than what we'd been using. So I realized, well, these static methods of multiple bands or multi-band filtering or masking filters, they don't seem to be getting the job done. And then it occurred to me, as you could see on that sweep, the inner mod is kind of random spectra, because as the frequencies are falling at different points, your inner mod is going to be inner mod multiples of what's going on with the fundamentals. So I'm figuring, we got some filtering topology scenarios going on here, and we need to find a way, is there a way to break out critical areas where the inner mod's occurring? So I think I just basically touched on this. You know, more processing bands is not the answer. If anything, it's a waste of DSP cycles. And if anything, I think it's probably, from a business standpoint, it's a waste of marketing. And so do, as you open up Radio World and Radio Guide and all the other things, beware of the marketing rhetoric. Multiband clipping, which has been around for a while, does not take into consideration any interactivity of the outlying spectra. That's that randomness that's going on with regard to the inner mod. And that, I think, is where the method eventually fails. I'm not saying it fails, it eventually fails. And if you remember, we've reached a point where we're pushing everything. You know, for those of you pilots out there, we're at the red line and beyond. So we've got to be able to stick the red line further out. So the answer. I then came up with some ways to look at what ranges is the IMD going to fall based on certain criteria, and would I be able to do some tricks to suppress this so that when things are happening in the low, the mid, the presence, and the highs, that their products are not going to be interactive with anything else. And here's a before and after, basically, of the same signal, where you can see some intermod on the one on the, what would be, I think, your left, and then the one towards the right, basically the intermod is gone. What we came up with was an adaptable means to suppress both intermod simultaneously as well as harmonic distortion. It does involve a number of spectral octaves and a way to manipulate what's known as the Gibbs phenomenon, and this is how we're able to achieve this. Yes, it is a secret recipe, and being the fact that my father's side of my family is Sicilian, I left all the details with Tony Soprano. So if you'd like those details, you know, take it up with him. Now, here we can do, here with the blue is the old thing that we showed before. We're going to sweep it again, and you can see intermod products coming into the picture. And on the yellow, which is the new method, there's no intermod coming in at all. By the way, the signals are both being handled exactly the same with the same amount of clipping and filtering and things of that nature. So now that we've gotten this far, we have engineering proof. We're going to welcome back Ms. Clarkson, and we're going to basically use the same aggressive processing, this new no IMD method, and here's the result. I realize you guys are probably thinking, okay, Frank, you're sandbagging. So what was supposed to happen there was to go to the next one where you're able to hear it with 2 dB morph clipping. Now, obviously, there is dynamics going on, and it's set up for aggressive loudness. If, you know, the thing we noticed is that running this method and comparing it to anything we've done prior or other products, the audio is sonically much cleaner with other content that would not just be a vocal and a piano. There's much more added detail to cymbals. Bass is especially stands out. It's very compelling sounding. There's gone is that like kind of like that, you know, knocking on wood, you know, from when bass gets over the top with regard to hard limiting or clipping and things of that nature. There's an added level of clarity that's put back into the audio, yet the loudness level does remain the same. So what gives? The answer lies, again, not in the number of clipping bands and filters, but how all distortion products are dealt with interactively and on an instantaneous basis. Multiband or five or six or more bands is not the answer. Once again, multiband clipping does not, and multiband filtering does not take into consideration any interactivity of outlined spectra. That's where the method, as I mentioned earlier, does fall apart. The proof is in the sonic performance with critical content. A big point that I'm working to highlight here is that if we are able to get our hands around the elements that cause intermodulation distortion, not just in clipping, but actually even in dynamics control, we're able to reduce and in some cases eliminate the annoyances that the ear locks onto that could be the tune out. And that's why this, you know, as I was chatting with, you know, in those work panels in New York, I'm not going to be real quick to say, oh, it's too loud, therefore it's fatiguing. You can have something that's not set up for loudness, and if the processing is wrong, it can be fatiguing. It comes down to how best is dealt with intermodulation with regard to dynamics control and final limiting. And the proof is in the pudding in that if you're able to get your hands around the intermod aspects, you're able to definitely generate a compelling qualitative sound as along with what I call an effortlessly loud signal. As I get ready to wrap up here, I do need to acknowledge these people that you see on the screen here, as they've been people that have either over the years shared input with me or brought things to the table that have helped us, as well as in this research. Sadly, the last two are a couple people that are not with us anymore. Jim Somich was my mentor in this industry, and Jim, I think in a moment of insanity, back in 1978, hired this long-haired, really thin kid to be chief engineer at WMMS, and I've forever been indebted to him. And Jim was another one of these guys who was as passionate about audio processing as anyone I've ever known. Matt Connor, many years ago, had attended this convention on a number of times. He worked up in Minneapolis in broadcasting, and Matt also was another tremendous brain and mind with regard to signal processing and had a great set of ears. And knew how to melt the paint off a tower. So I wanted to take a moment publicly and acknowledge those two because I can only hope that their spirit is here sharing in this today.
If you can see,
yeah,
the numbers all go to 11. Look, right across the board, 11, oh, 11,
and most of
11,
and then amps go up to 10.
Exactly.
Does that mean it's louder? Is it any louder?
Well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. You see, most blokes, you know, be playing at 10. You're on 10 here, all the way up, all the way up,
yeah,
all the way up. You're on 10 on your guitar. Where can you go from there? Where?
I don't know.
Nowhere, exactly.
Why don't you just make 10 louder and make 10 be the top number and make that a little louder?
These go to 11.
Thank you very much. If anyone has questions, I think we have time. I'd be happy to entertain them. If not, I'd like to thank the gang from SB and Wisconsin Broadcasters, Don and the whole group, and Leonard for having the opportunity to share this little story with you guys. And, you know, as I was chatting with somebody at lunch, again, and I think I said this last year, and I'll say it every year, I want to tip my hat to you guys because it's still great to see a bunch of broadcasters come together who have a willingness to want to listen and learn and ask questions. And I'm glad to see that there's other people aside from ourselves and other companies that recognize this, where we can come out and not only share our stories with you, but you know, to go back to Gordon's thing about trains, I don't want us to be the caboose on the, you know, on the train of broadcasting. You know, we got to be bringing guys up, and it's good to see a good group here. So if any of you have a question, I'd be happy to answer it. Yes.
Yeah, Frank, I was struck by what you said regarding fatigue and age. I was thinking maybe it was just me getting old, you know, that popular music seemed much harsher and more abrasive and heavily processed right off the record, right off the CD. And I think it struck me that they're imitating broadcast because some of their outlets now, maybe their most important outlet is direct play to the listeners.
I can give you a direct answer to that. A number about almost 10 years ago, a friend of mine that I knew growing up in Cleveland worked in a recording studio in New York. And he asked me to come in and was asking if we would take a version, create a version of a mastering processor. I said, sure. So they took me to Sterling Sound, one of the more renowned mastering shops in the world. And I went, we went this one night, and I meet this fella, I think his name was Chris Athens, good guy. And he mastered a lot of R&B hip-hop stuff. And he, you know, knew that I came from the radio side of life, and he said, well, listen, you need to understand something. And he's talking to me, and he said, these artists, they come in here. And, like, you know, this, you know, I for lack of a better thing, I'll say, you know, Jay-Z came in and he played me his the record made by this other guy. And he said, his record's louder. I got to be louder than him. And I start chuckling. He goes, what are you laughing? I said, because those guys have stolen a page out of the world of radio. And basically what they do, believe it or not, is they push it in the mastering lab to clip. And here's where they get into trouble, is they're mastering at 44.1 kilohertz. Well, you start pushing something into clipping at 44.1 kilohertz, you're going to get a lot of aliasing distortion. You know, we do creative things at higher sampling rates, and I know the other guys that make broadcast processors do too, with the intention to suppress aliasing distortion. Well, that's where a lot of this happens. And they know that you can't have plus 3 dB full scale, but they're pushing it, and that's where it's coming from. And if you take a CD, like a current one, and put it on, take the output, like a hip-hop record for sure, run it into an oscilloscope, and you'll see square waves.
Yes, indeed. And then we try to run them through the processing again on the
yep.
air. Maybe they should make us a separate version.
Well, I do know that there are some artists that do have the recording studio do a radio mix, and they will audition it through an audio processor, because we have loaned some of our gear out to various studios for that purpose. Yes.
Were any of your tests done comparing with an Aphex 2020 processor?
No, we do have a 2020, and I know they have a patent on this Intermod thing, but all of them cause this frying. And you see, the key is if you just set up a straight clipper to do it, you won't hear it. The trick is what, well, I should say the anomaly that really kicks in is once the preemphasis starts bringing that presence up, that and you've got that density of the preemphasis that's sitting there, that's where it basically gets into this crazy sizzle. And by the way, you can go, that record is readily available at any store. You know, go set it up and run it. And use one of the, you know, more aggressive presets and you'll hear it. You back it down and the problem goes away.
Frank,
yes.
For those of us that have several Omnia boxes, is this a software upgrade or is this a forklift upgrade?
This is, keep your eyes into the crystal ball in the year 2010.
Okay.
Actually, to get this done takes a fair amount of horsepower. So it's you're getting a preview of,
okay.
If I say much more, I'll be cement shoes, all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Cue up the Sopranos or something. Yes, sir.
Frank, is there anything you can do to help our broadcasting brothers that transmit pictures to get some consistency in their broadcast audio?
Actually, Actually, Vern, you're a smart man, and I probably owe you, you know, a beer or something, because a little over a year and a half ago, our company merged with a group from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, known as Linear Acoustic. And these guys, led by a fellow by the name of Tim Carroll, know television broadcast audio better than anyone. Tim's a former Dolby guy, so he knows where all the bones are buried in the Dolby digital system. And they have a whole portfolio of product for just straight HD TV processing, as well as surround sound processing, loudness monitoring, including we have, since we're all together now, we have product that even embeds the Dolby digital encoder. So with all that has transpired this year, we're now, lately the phone's been ringing off the hook, because now the TV is switched to digital, people are complaining that the audio is all over the place. So go on the internet and check Linear Acoustic, and I guarantee you they have the answer. If not, I've got a 750-pound steam engine you can have.
A follow-up question to that. As you know, the Senate is now debating putting loudness control through legislation on all of us TV broadcasters. Has your company been invited to participate in any of that at any level?
Actually, Tim Carroll is the guy that would be give you a better answer to that. But yes, Tim has actually had some dialogue with Representative Eshoo from California, because she's the one who introduced it. I understand that as of last week, it's on the floor for discussion at this point. And one of our customers, the guys at NBC in New York, have been all over this, and they have been to Washington a number of times. As a matter of fact, I think next week or something, there's some DTV audio thing that's going on in DC, and I expect within the upcoming months that this thing is, when it came out a year ago, I remember thinking, oh, this will die, except, you know, use FUD, you know, fear, uncertainty, and doubt. Let's get the message out. You know, either do it or you'll pay us later. But it has grown legs, and it came up for discussion in New York on Sunday, and there are many in the room that feel it's going to pass. And I'm kind of torn on it, because it's kind of sad that we'd have to go to like some legal thing that says, you must use this device to make sure that the sound is right on TV, but the business side of me says, hey, you know, bring it on.
Well, I agree with you, and whether it's device related in the end or not, we'll see. But broadcasters are not saints in this, but I think broadcasters actually have done a much better job of normalizing their audio levels compared to cable and satellite, which are really all over the place.
No question. And I, before the HDTV system came on, and I had a wild idea about 10 years ago, and I even attended a number of the Dolby papers on the Dolby digital system for broadcast. And I'd wave my arm, and they'd go through all their, you know, chit-chat about it, and I'd say, guys, I'm sorry, but your system ain't going to work, because dial norm's going to be authored manually, and if a guy wants some Raceway Park commercial to be 5 dB louder, he's just going to crank up the dial norm. Oh, no, good engineering practice dictates differently. Well, good engineering practice in New York City dictates you hold to 100% modulation on FM. Not. So, what's happened is exactly what's happened. Add to that the system is a wideband animal. So the guy at the podium, who used to have really long hair and about 30 more pounds, had a wild idea that said, what if we made a box that read in the metadata, looked at the audio, and if they're wrong, we'll reauthor it. And Tim Carroll at the time was working at Dolby, and he said to me, you can't do that, because you won't be able to get inside the data stream. Well, I always kept this idea in the back of my head that that's what needed to be done. Well, long came this Albatross HD radio. Oh, I'm sorry, did I say Albatross? And I spent like 5-6 years goofing around on that Tim got frustrated at Dolby, left, took the idea, and they've made a product where you can take it in, and if the metadata is wrong, it'll get properly authored, so that what comes out of the consumer's, you know, set-top box or monitoring device is done correctly. So we do have the answer out there, and sadly, I for those of you in TV land out there, you know, the Dolby myth that was given to you is like, you know, drinking Jim Jones Kool-Aid. You do need something that's going to make sure that the audio is right. And we do have, so Vern, you asked a simple question. Sorry for the long-winded answer, but yeah, there's an answer for it. You guys are great. Any other questions? Once again, thank you very much.